we went, we were seeing a concert at the rodeo last night. But then right before the concert, they do mutton busting.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mutton bustin'.
Sorry, mutton bustin'.
Yeah. It's an which apostrophe.
Is, in Ohio, we call child abuse. Because it's
I would also animal abuse.
Take a five-year-old, put it on the back of an angry sheep, and say, hold on to its hair, and then let the sheep run and see how long the kid can hold on.
Yeah.
And then if the kid makes it to the end...
They do have a helmet on.
Okay. Oh, okay. That makes it okay. Yes. But if the kid... Like, the best case scenario is that the kid and the sheep make it to the other end and run into a wall. Like, that is, that is the best case scenario.
Sure, that's the goal.
Right.
All right. Well, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast, where we are exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff, and with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Katie Phillips.
Hello.
All right, so today we have a special treat for our listeners.
Yeah.
We have an interview.
We do.
Yes, with Pastor Chuck Kinzvater.
Mm-hmm.
If you're saying, hey, that name Kinzvater sounds familiar, it's because we talked to his son and daughter-in-law several weeks ago.
Yeah.
And about camp.
Yeah, we did. I'm trying to remember what episode that was, but it was a while ago.
It was a while ago. Yeah,
you can find it.
Yeah.
It had a cool name, like Camp or something like that.
No.
We're not that creative with our names. I don't know.
I was not part of this interview, so Pastor David, what did you and Chuck talk about?
Yeah, so Chuck and I sat down to have a conversation, because in his post-pastor life, so he's retired from serving a congregation, and he's become a spiritual director. And so we talked about what that looks like for him to be serving people in this capacity of kind of helping us walk through spirituality and experiencing God in different ways, and how we can use some of the tips and tricks that he gives to his clients or people that come and work with him, how we can use those in our everyday practices. And so one of the big kind of hits that we were trying to hit on was that we can experience God in the everyday stuff. Like, you don't have to come to church on Sunday morning to have a spiritual experience. You don't have to be on a mountaintop in the middle of nowhere to have a spiritual experience. Like, that spirituality and those spiritual experiences can be in even the mundane and boring parts of our lives.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of mundane and boring.
Oh, all right.
Let's take a look at some news.
Excellent.
All right. Do you guys like Easter baskets?
I do.
Yeah. Yes.
Is there a particular treat you want in your Easter basket every year?
I don't know that I would say that I want this treat every year, but growing up, we always got toothbrushes and toothpaste in our Easter basket.
That's not a treat.
I'm just telling
that's
you
like
what
a
we got.
Punishment.
Yeah. Okay, I will tell you, I am not a big fan, but they were always in our Easter baskets growing up. My sisters both love them. I do not. Still don't. And that would be Peeps.
Peeps. Oh, yeah. They're disgusting.
Yeah. Both of my sisters loved them. Yeah. One of my children loves them. The other one hates them.
Yeah.
What about like a...
I'm not a big fan.
A Cadbury egg.
Ooh, those are delicious.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't like Cadbury eggs.
Oh.
I like them a lot.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
No, but the Reese's peanut butter cups that come in the shape of an egg, I'll eat that. But I mean, that's a candy.
But those
year
are
round.
Different
that
than
count.
Regular Reese's. Because I like regular Reese's, but I don't really care
for... You call them Reese's?
Yeah.
Reese's.
They're Reese's.
Oh, you're so from Ohio.
That's not an Ohio thing. I'm saying it correctly.
I would go with Reese's as well.
Yes, thank you, Patrick.
They're Reese's.
Well, Reese's?
Reese's Pieces. Reese's Cups.
Listeners, if you will please.
Oh, they are Reese's Pieces.
Yeah, Reese's.
No, they're Reese's Pieces.
Have you ever said the word pieces?
This is the real thing.
I'm finding God in this moment right now.
I'm taking my ball and going home.
All right.
I don't want to play with you guys anymore.
It's fine. However you want to pronounce that, you can pronounce.
Yeah, because I'm pronouncing it correctly. Didn't we just have this? About, this is like the news article that Patrick had last time, or at least one of the times ago. I don't know when it was. About people who judge people for their grammar. You all judging me.
That's
for my
grammar.
Pronunciation.
This is not grammar.
I know. I was getting there. It's different but connected. Whatever. I'm gonna go eat a Reese's cup.
Reese's.
And drink my soda. And
well, at least, soda you're pronouncing correctly. Right. You're not just inventing new pronunciations. Well, speaking of things that are hard to pronounce. this year at IKEA, you can buy your own chocolate Easter bunny, and it doesn't require assembly.
It does require?
It does. You have to put together your own chocolate bunny.
Yes. Like, do you get icing or something? Is that how you put it together?
No, it comes in three pieces, your bunny.
An almond. Yeah, okay.
And just tighten that up. Yes. Yeah. Have y'all ever bought anything from IKEA?
Yeah.
No.
I have a variety of IKEA furniture in my home.
Yeah.
That is mostly falling apart at this part because it's like 5 to 6 years old and has been moved like 4 or 5 times. So it's well lived past its real, life expectancy.
That's the real challenge of the IKEA furniture is moving it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's once it's there, it's fine, but it's hard to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Without falling apart. Well,
disintegrating in chaos.
Well, this spring, you could buy a Varkenslaw.
Varkenslaw?
The Varkenslaw.
I don't think Patrick's saying that right.
For our Swedish listeners.
Reese's?
I think it's a Reese's. I think that's how it's pronounced.
Varkenslaw. Chocolate Easter Bunny comes with 3 pieces that you can assemble. It does not need an Allen wrench.
So how do you assemble it?
Well, here, I'll show you a picture.
Oh, this is going to be great podcast.
Well, we can put the picture on our website.
Wow. Okay, so it fits together like those.
Yeah. Oh, it's like a puzzle.
Well, it's not like it's like a 3D like a model, like a model airplane kind of thing where they like slide together. I'm making the motion.
that's really appropriate.
So that our podcasters can know.
Yeah, I'll describe it here. So you have like a little foot part that connects to the body of the Easter Bunny.
The foot bone connects to the leg bone.
And then little ears that click in on top.
I'm sure it clicks.
Well, you know. And then you could put that together. Have you all ever been to IKEA? Walked around?
But I really want to go now.
Okay. It's
there's one here.
That's kind of fun. An experience.
Yeah.
Like when you get in there, you're kind of trapped in there until you leave. Like it's like you walk through one continuous path.
Yeah, I wouldn't say trapped.
I would say trapped. Like, and you really kind of go through everything. So if you're like, I want one kitchen table.
Oh, so you can't
there are cut-throughs, but you're supposed to go through every portion of IKEA.
I see.
And then you write down the little number, and then you go to the giant warehouse area, and you find it on a shelf, and you take it home in a box.
Yeah. And you build it.
Yeah.
They have some really good stuff. And it is a cool experience. I like it.
I like IKEA, too. I think it's kind of neat.
And it's well-priced.
Sounds fun.
It stresses my wife out. She is
The experience can be super stressful.
Yeah. Definitely, I would not take my children, then.
No, kids love it.
There's a child play area, too, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
So like, just drop them off?
Pawn them off on someone else.
Yeah, and halfway through, there's like a food court. So you can take a break. Get your Varkenslaw.
I've heard very good Swedish meatballs. I have not had their Swedish meatballs, but...
Yeah. Have y'all seen, there's like a 30 Rock episode where they go to IKEA and all the couples there are fighting because they're in like this stressful environment. You know, it's like that's part of IKEA experiences, going there with your loved one and seeing if you can survive.
That's awesome. I've not seen
we're
that
We're going to walk in. Let's see if we're still married.
Right, yeah, on the other side.
I'm going to start to bring that into my pastoral counseling for premarital situations. Sure. We're going to take couples to IKEA and see how they handle that as a growth opportunity.
Well, the 3-ounce bunny retails for $4.29. And it's not available online. Sorry.
Oh, so you have to go to IKEA.
You will have to go
to IKEA. You have to walk through the entire store.
And find it.
To find the bunny.
Probably near the food court in the middle.
Probably not.
And it's gone.
Probably near the children's play area.
That might be true.
And it's packed flat, so it's not like a Easter bunny. Well, you ever have an Easter bunny that looks awesome? It's like giant.
Right, yeah.
And then you bite into it and it's hollow.
Sure.
It's like, this is a solid Easter bunny.
Okay.
So there you go.
I just like that IKEA is like big things. Like we do everything flat because like everything you buy is packed flat. Yeah. So, like, even their Easter bunny.
Well, I mean, it's a solid piece of chocolate.
Right, yeah.
At least
I dig it.
That's what this article is saying.
That's great.
So let's talk about how we find God in the everyday.
Yeah, let's talk about it. So I've got a story, I guess, the best way to say it. So I was in high school, and actually, that's not true. I was in my first year of college, and I had come home, and I was visiting with a friend who was still in high school. And while I was in college, I'd been doing, some work at a camp, and I'd been thinking about experiencing God in different ways. And as we were sitting on the porch, we were talking about, how we were experiencing our faith at this point. And I said to my friend, like, hey, it's just really great that I can sit here and we can, see the trees moving and we can feel the breeze coming around. And I can experience God in those moments. That for me, God is in the breeze that's blowing through the trees. And God is in the noise that the tree is making and speaking to the world around it and everything like that. And my friend was pretty offended, I guess, maybe is the best way to say this. Maybe that's too harsh, and so I don't want to necessarily speak for them, but we'll call it offended, saying that that was unchristian, that to say that God is in everything was just, being, I guess they would have described it as a naturist or something like that, where, everything has a soul and God is in everything and God is not one thing. And so I'm wondering what our take on that would be. Like, how do you experience God in the everyday, and yet know that God is not in those things, right? Like, yeah. I don't think that God is in a rock, mm-hmm. but I think that a rock can lead me towards an experience of the mm-hmm. ways in which God is in the world. What do you all think about that?
So our mom's Bible study just did a 3-week study with Jen Kinsvater.
Wow.
I know, right?
Those Kinsvaters. They're everywhere. Yes.
They're like our most recurring theme now.
I know, right? On wonder. The first week study was on wonder in nature mm-hmm. and where is God in nature mm-hmm. and around us. I don't know that I believe that the tree is actually God.
Right.
But
I wouldn't say the tree is God either.
Right. Yeah. But you can experience the wonder of God mm-hmm. in that.
Yeah, I think for us as Christians, and you know, in the Old Testament view of God, you know, they had this picture of God who kind of like his home was the temple, you know,
right.
like that they would, you to encounter or experience God, you have to go to this specific place in a specific time mm-hmm. to have that encounter. And even then, that encounter was kind of segmented. So
right.
like as the higher up the food chain you were, you got to experience God more mm-hmm. fully mm-hmm. than people on the lower end of the food mm-hmm. chain. And so when Jesus comes, you know, he definitely talks about like how now everything is shifting, and Paul will elaborate that the temple of God is now no longer a physical structure, but inside each and every mm-hmm. one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that this is important because sometimes I think even now, 2,000 years later, we confuse spirituality or connection with God to like major moments.
Mm-hmm.
And we think sometimes mm-hmm. it's easy in our own history to be like, what are my most spiritual moments? It was a mission trip when mm-hmm. I was a kid. Mm-hmm. It was this trial or hardship that I went through that I connected to God in a special way. Or it was these big life events mm-hmm. where God pops mm-hmm. his head, because those are the big things in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's part of, I think, being a fully developed Christian is experiencing God mm-hmm. in those mundane things. So in the everyday, because God is not waiting for big mountaintop experiences or big
right.
valley experiences. Mm-hmm. God is waiting for sitting at a red light. God is present.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And watching a mother and child at the grocery store interact. God is present.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that that can be a really powerful, special moment
mm-hmm.
that sometimes in our busy culture, mm-hmm. we forget to take the time to experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I have not studied yoga extensively, but in yoga there's a greeting, I think a namaste, and I'm pretty sure that I'm remembering this correctly, that actually means like, I see God in you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sometimes we confuse that or allow ourselves to get concerned that that means that we are saying the other person is God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those two things are very different for us
yeah.
because I think we can look at one another and remember that we are made in God's image. And so when we look at another human being, we are seeing a reflection of God. We are seeing an image of God in that we are all created in God's image. And so there's, you know, just in our interactions with daily people, we are encountering people who can open us up to the opportunity to experience God in those moments.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that you are God or I am God, but that God is present in and amongst all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really valuable reminder. You know, how would that change our discourse with people that we disagree with
mm-hmm.
if we start by saying, I see God in you,
yeah.
right? I disagree with you, but I know that you are as much a child of God as I am a child of
mm-hmm.
God, and that you are, that we are in this together. You know, how would that change how we talk to one another, how we interact with one another, how we treat our neighbors, how we treat strangers, how we treat people in the checkout lines at stores?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of that, I think, is affected if we allow ourselves to have that shift.
Yeah.
That doesn't say this other person is God, but that
yeah.
God is present, and I might experience God through my interaction with them if I open myself up to it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I think that's the beautiful reminder that, you know, the presence of God is in every person.
Yeah.
Years ago, I saw this thing that really convicted me at the time. It was about Osama bin Laden. This was pre-death, so pre the United States military went in and killed him. And it said, if the greatest desire for a Christian in regards to Osama bin Laden is not that he repents and connects to Jesus, then what are we doing? You know, like, and this is like,
yeah.
if my greatest desire is justice or vengeance or murder and not repentance and restoration, then I think, you know, and that's an extreme
yeah.
mountaintop experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the person who cut me off in traffic, if my greatest desire is not that they have a special connection with Jesus that day, and it becomes, I hope that they get pulled over.
Right.
You know, I think that reshifts how we see the world.
Right.
Yep. That we want to see God present in the lives of those around us and not petty vengeance or petty selfishness or the things that just benefit me in my world.
Yeah. And I think sometimes that forces us to slow down.
Yeah.
I feel like we go so fast and the world moves so quickly now that we aren't taking the time to stop and actually notice where God is.
Yeah.
That we're too much in a hurry and we're going too quickly.
Yeah.
And we miss that along the way.
And I think this probably fits in with a lot of the things we've discussed on this podcast of like how we manage our time and our phones.
Sure. Yep.
I don't know if y'all saw, but like your iPhone now can tell you like how much time you've spent on your phone.
I love it.
I hate it. Who asked for this? Certainly not me. Because let me tell you something. That number is way higher than I think it should be. And I'm like, it's lying to me. There's no way.
Nope.
Uh-huh.
I was averaging 4 hours on my phone last week. Like, that's not possible. Mm-hmm. And so
every time you pick it up, it like goes... Starting the timer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
if only it said that.
Right?
If every time you picked up your phone, it said, I'm starting a timer. Oh, okay, I'll put it down and walk away.
But I do think that's a good reminder of, like, how are we experiencing our lives? Are we just kind of dulling our senses through media, phone, the endless news cycle, or kind of figuring out what's next, or taking the time to be still.
Yeah.
And I think that's a powerful thing so we can do.
Right. We hit on this with our sexuality episode too, right? How can we appreciate the sweetness of an apple when we're overindulged in the super sugarized whatever? You know, it's the same thing with our screen and with our world around us. How can we appreciate the subtlety and the sweetness of a connection with God and another human when we are expecting always to have these mountaintop things that draw us in?
Mm-hmm.
Well, great. I think that'll lead us great into our interview
with
Pastor Chuck Kinsvater.
All right.
All right. So
we hope you enjoy.
Welcome
back to Beyond Sunday. I'm here with Chuck Kinsvater, a spiritual director and retired pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And Chuck, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you taking the time to be here.
It's great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if you could start out by just telling us a little bit about your own personal journey, how you moved from being a pastor to becoming a spiritual director. What was that walk like for you?
Fairly easy in the sense, as I look back, there was some marked points along the way. About, I was probably in my mid-50s, I was at a pastor's conference, and a retired pastor came up to me and said, I just completed doing a spiritual directing course. I had no idea what he was talking about.
Sure.
So I kind of followed up, learned that there was a order of sisters in Houston, the Cenacle Sisters, C-E-N-A-C-L-E. Their vow is education.
Oh, wow.
And they spend their ministry, their life in education, specifically on spiritual education. And so the gentleman said he really grew by it and learned a lot, and he was probably close to his 70s and just was really renewed by it, having spent his life in the ordained ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So I called the Cenacle Sisters and I said I'd like to learn more about that. And I thought to myself, I think I'd like to get a spiritual director first. So they assigned me to Sister Mary Dennison. And I was with her for a full year and went once a month and met with her at the Cenacle. At that time, it was on Kirkwood and Memorial Drive. After that experience of being in direction by Sister Mary, I applied to be in, they have a 3-year course to become a spiritual director. You meet once a week during the school year.
Okay.
And so I completed those 3 years. That was you don't graduate.
Sure.
Rather, you get certified.
Okay. All right.
And I was certified in 1999.
Okay.
But I was still senior pastor here at Lord of Life in the Woodlands. And so I didn't do a whole lot with it. Although our last year of direction, you are asked to do directing with the person you know.
Okay.
And then you do verbatims.
Okay. Yep.
A little like clinical training.
Sure.
You do verbatims. And then the class, every once in a while, you go through it and they evaluate, why did you say this?
Yeah.
What's spiritual directing about that? And she was a member of our congregation here. So, in fact, She's still a directee. That was in 99. Yeah. So, but the long and short of it is, that's when I got the practical experience of it and really grew by that. When you do the spiritual directing education, you're reading a whole different line of authors than you did, say, in seminary or scripture studies. It's a whole different, everything from centuries ago of spiritual writers up to the current.
Lewis, so when we're talking about spiritual direction, we're not just talking about someone coming to you with a problem and you saying, well, here's a Bible verse that fits that. And we're not just saying, well, here's a psychological treatment or pill that I can give you. So what is a typical spiritual direction appointment? I guess, I don't know if appointment's even the right word, but what is that? What does that look like?
Well, that's a great question. People come, first of all, they're like, we're talking right now.
Yeah.
What in the world is spiritual directing?
Yeah.
Number one, the word spiritual will throw people off.
Mm-hmm.
I had one come and they said, well, do I need to bring paper and pen and a Bible? I said, you don't need any of those.
Yeah.
And they were kind of surprised. Why? Because spiritual directing is you talk about what's going on in your life.
Mm.
And a director spiritually listens for maybe, where's God in that? And often people will come and they'll start our conversation with, I really don't know what to talk about today. 45 minutes later, they're still talking.
Yeah.
Because one of my senses of spiritual directing, it's spiritual, but it happens in everyday life, in what's going on in your everyday life. That's where God meets us.
Mm-hmm.
When we hear the word spiritual, often I think we try to think of the heavens or something.
Sure, yeah.
You don't walk on the earth, you're about 5 feet
right.
off.
Right,
Semantically, that's kind of what we've done with that word.
I have noticed your feet don't touch the ground when you walk around.
That's true. But I'm ordained, too.
Oh, right. So, okay. You know, all right.
And I walk on water and things like that.
Of course,
But the bottom line is the spirituality happens in your everyday life. That's where God meets us.
Mm.
That's where we encounter him. That's where God plays out his marvelous story of grace.
Yeah.
When you go to scripture, we read the Jacob and Joseph story, or we read Moses and the Promised Land. We read Sarah and Abraham. We read Mary and Joseph.
Yeah.
We read about the woman at the well. It was in the everyday.
Yeah.
And Jesus didn't walk 3 feet off the ground either.
Yeah.
No, he did walk on water.
He did do
but
that
other
one,
than that,
and, you know.
And knew where to fish.
Sure.
But other than that, in fact, I have a whole series when I'm introducing someone who's directing from the Gospel of Luke, and I just use common ordinary phrases.
Yeah.
Like, after leaving the synagogue, Jesus entered Simon's house. Once when Jesus was in one of the cities, it's the ordinary.
Yeah, the everyday.
Every day. He didn't say, okay, I'm going to go to the synagogue, then I can be spiritual.
Right.
He was spiritual in the sense of encountering God in the everyday.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the directing. The spiritual is helping people to see God in the ordinary.
Yeah.
To see God in the ordinary happenings in one's life. To see God, to see Christ, to see the Spirit moving. Oh, I was just at the grocery store and this woman talked to me and we started. That's where God meets us, in the here and now.
Yeah, I love that response. We've talked previously on the podcast about the value of camping ministry, and particularly how camping ministry kind of draws you out. It's a place apart, gives you something outside of your normal everyday experience and lets you experience God and spirituality in a new way.
Right.
And what I love about this is that it's like, okay, now take that and bring it back and do it all the time. You don't have to go to camp to experience God.
Exactly.
You don't have to have that mountaintop experience, so to speak. You can just be in the grocery store and having a conversation with a clerk, or being stuck in traffic and getting cut off by someone else.
Exactly.
And all of those can be spiritual experiences.
Right. So to me, that's what I learned from Sister Mary.
Yeah.
Was the spiritual, we so often semantically misinterpret it because we've made it otherworldly.
Mm.
Where in a good spiritual directing conversation, we realize it happens in the world. Not of the world, but in the world. You think of Jesus' ministry as he's walking around alleyways in the waters with his fishermen, with the men and the women. He would tell stories.
Yeah.
Sort of the once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
There was a man who had two sons.
Yeah.
There was a woman who lost a coin. There was this shepherd who lost... I mean, he's doing the same thing, taking the ordinary, and out of that ordinary, that's where God encounters us.
Yeah.
Whether it's in a manger in Bethlehem or before the civil authorities under Pontius Pilate. I mean, it's in those contexts. And at best, that's what spiritual directing is.
Okay.
A director will listen, do more listening than talking,
mm-hmm.
but listening to what that story this person is expressing that particular day. And every once in a while, I'll interrupt a story by saying, where do you think God is in that?
Yeah.
Or is he? Or is she?
Yeah.
Is the Spirit, what's the Spirit saying?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it'll catch someone off guard, including myself. Because, well, gee, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
You know. Well, anyway.
Yeah, so when you have spiritual directees come to you, is there a particular type of person or perhaps a type of situation that you think kind of most helps people open up to the process of spiritual direction? Like, are certain people more inclined to appreciate spiritual direction than others? Is it something that all of us should really be, like, this should just be something that we require of all people, and you're baptized and now you enter spiritual direction?
In some ways you do.
Yeah.
I don't think there's one category of
people. Okay.
If there's a category, it would be a category that's somewhere in their life, whatever age they're at. And I have seminary students to retired.
Yeah.
Something's happened, or there's a new depth of seeing something.
Mm-hmm.
Or in spiritual directing, there's a big word called discernment.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people come discernment, figuring out. Often it's a person who is thinking of a new career
or
a possibility of a job promotion or has been asked to move, and they're trying to discern, mm-hmm. figure out where God might be calling them. They might not even use that God language.
Yeah.
But what's this? Or there's something going on in a marriage relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, it's those kind of issues, and that can happen to anyone.
Yeah.
I've had people say, I don't know why I came.
Hmm.
And 5 years later, they're saying they don't ever come back to that. At times they say, well, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
I remember I asked one woman, and I don't know why this question came to me, but she'd probably been coming for 3 or 4 years. I said to her, why do you keep coming?
Yeah.
Because that particular conversation, she said, I keep coming because it's the only hour in the month where I'm listened to.
Wow.
I have no idea what her issues were. I didn't pick up on that on any marriage issues,
mm-hmm.
but it was where I'm listened to without judgment.
Yeah.
And I'm heard.
Mm-hmm.
So she's, that for me wasn't because of what I can do, but it's literally spiritual. It's spirit-led.
Yeah.
And those conversations open up people that way.
Yeah.
So,
you know, one of the things that we have also touched on previously is that church can sometimes be a place where we struggle to be our authentic selves.
Correct.
That for one reason or another, we put on these fronts and we put on this, our Sunday best, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like spiritual direction is a perfect complement, where it's a place where you can be completely who God called you to be. And you can throw out crazy ideas and you can say things that... you know, on a Sunday morning, you might say, if I say this, I'm going to get kicked out of the church, right?
Exactly.
But you can say this in a spiritual direction context because you have a director who's there to listen to you free from judgment and just reflect with, what does that mean for you?
Right.
And where is God in this idea that perhaps you think is crazy, but in actuality has been around for thousands of years, right? I mean,
Great. That's great, David. See, to me, ironically, a person who says, why did God do this to me?
Mm-hmm.
Or why is God angry with me is a very spiritual question.
Sure.
It doesn't turn God off. It actually is a great spiritual question.
Mm-hmm.
If God's all loving and powerful, why did this happen? Those aren't questions that we think turns God off.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, it turns him on.
Yeah.
The Spirit starts moving.
Yeah.
And the wind starts blowing in a window of your mind
mm-hmm.
that's been opened. So what some people think of spirit, well, I probably shouldn't say that about God. But then you haven't read the Psalms or Lamentations.
Yeah.
Or you haven't heard some of the disciples. Jesus, what are you doing with that woman? I mean, that's very, again, in the very ordinary.
Yeah.
And in spiritual directing, hopefully you can create an atmosphere and a field where people will feel themselves in asking the question, rather than thinking they're angering God or somehow they're unchristian. It's the very act of that opens up what spirituality is.
Yeah, so nothing's off limits.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's no question we can ask that's going to anger God.
Right.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, in our the sisters will talk about what's the difference between therapy and Christian and spiritual directing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds like the beginning of a joke.
Yes, it does. Two nuns walk into a bar.
Right.
But anyway. I never did that with either of them.
Yeah, well,
okay. But it's like, you know it when you're starting to get therapeutic.
Hmm.
It was a wonderful answer. It's like the Supreme Court said, we can't really define pornography, but when you see it, you know it.
Yeah.
Same way when I'm in conversation of a spiritual directing, I will know when I'm getting into therapy, which I'm not trained to do,
right.
But I know it. And I'll even say, well, maybe the spirit might be leading you to find a therapist.
Right, yeah.
And the people, it's just fascinating that way, because spiritual directing has to do, where's God's spirit moving in
right.
you? Where's God's gifts that he's given to you? And so I know that sounds like I'm jumping around the question, but I've just found that over these, I've been doing this since 2006.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I'm getting into therapy and I need to step back.
Yeah, because that's not your role.
That's not my role, nor is it my training, other than seminary stuff. But it's I'm not a therapist, but I am a spiritual director.
Right.
And the irony of not, well, spiritual directing, as I said earlier, might lead you.
Mm-hmm.
The spirit might be leading you to get some therapy.
Yeah, yeah. It's an important thing to open ourselves up to how the Spirit is working,
exactly.
even if that means the Spirit is working by getting us help somewhere else.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so one of the things that we have been hitting on, we're in the season of Lent here.
Sure.
And so we've kind of been talking on the podcast about this idea of spiritual practices and recentering our lives on God, that's the heart of this Lenten season, that we take these weeks that lead up to Easter to say, we've been focused on a whole bunch of other stuff all year long, but we're going to try to recenter ourselves through these weeks. And one of the things that I hear as a pastor and that Katie and Patrick have both heard in their work as well is that we just struggle with how to do these spiritual practices, right? Some of them seem so distant and far off. We're like, I don't know how to sit and meditate for 30 minutes. I don't know how to sit quietly for 30 seconds, let alone anything.
Yeah.
Right? So when you have someone who comes to you for spiritual direction and perhaps they specifically say, I really just want to figure out some spiritual practices that I can use in my everyday life. Mm-hmm. What are some things or resources that you might point them towards at that point?
It's a great question again, David, because what I find is most people, when they ask that kind of question, think it has to be laborious, has to be long, and it's supposed to be difficult.
Because you got to feel appropriately bad about it, right?
And if I can't meditate and be quiet for an hour, then there must be something wrong with my Christian journey.
Right.
That's the irony of that. But I will have people say, well, how long do you meditate? It just depends.
Yeah.
For instance, for some people that I do directing with, if they could stay quiet for 3 minutes, that would be great.
Yeah.
But we live in a culture that doesn't exhibit that. It shows the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You don't realize the speed of our culture.
Yeah.
And you're always supposed to be doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And to be quiet, there's just, be still. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I'm saying all that, David, only to say when they ask specifics, I'll usually say start slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Don't start off by, I better get up at 5:30 in the morning and spend an hour and a half.
Yeah.
It will eventually lead to that.
Mm.
I don't get up at 5:30.
There's only one 5:30 a day, right?
That's right. Well, 5:30 p.m.
Right, yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is as you practice it, then all of a sudden what you started out as 3 minutes becomes 10.
Yeah.
and then what becomes 10 a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, personality types also depend on your spirituality type, your prayer.
Yeah, yeah.
The Myers-Briggs test, for instance. There was a great book, and we read that in spiritual directing class, but depends where you are on the Myers-Briggs. If you're a big, you know, if you're an extrovert, if you're an introvert, that will decide what your prayer life looks like.
Sure.
I mean, is it comfortable for, I'm an extrovert, so I have to sort of discipline myself. If you're an introvert, sitting down and reading, some pray by reading certain books. Others pray by just being free, and the core to that, when I'm talking to people, is there's not a right or wrong. There isn't one that pleases Jesus more than the other. Or that God didn't hear you because you didn't say it right.
Right.
It's who you are. And part of spiritual directing is helping a person be freed up by that.
Okay. All right.
So I would say if you have prayer, I was with someone a couple of weeks ago, and she had just finished a sentence, and she was worried about praying, and I just said to her, you know what you just did? No, you were praying. Really? She was expressing some real concerns in her life. And you could have put her in the Book of Lamentations. But she didn't realize her ordinary wording, her ordinary expression, if she had just put the first word, Lord, that would have been a prayer. But she just saw it as conversation.
Right.
But what more is prayer than conversation?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, a part of training for that is to open up those doors of possibilities. Instead of it being, well, it better be like this, and it better be this length of time, and you better always have a Bible reading, and you better... It depends your style of being a person.
Sure. You know? Blow open the doors and see what the wind blows.
And my feeling is the more comfortable you are in your prayer life, by that I mean it's who you are. It's your personality expressing that.
Yeah.
Rather than it has to be like St. Augustine would have done it or Mary and Martha would have done it.
Yeah.
It's who you are. And
I've read some St. Augustine. I'm really glad it's not like what he has to do.
Or Karl Barth. Or Henry Nouwen or whoever.
Yeah. So when we're talking about Lenten disciplines around fasting, around prayer and sacrificial giving, right? Particularly, that's kind of what we're focused on in the season of Lent. Are there areas of that you find either in your own work or in your experience with other directees? Are there areas that are particularly helpful? Again, perhaps this is up to personality types, but are there ways that reframe things for people that are useful in helping them kind of get that low-hanging fruit, if you will? In my limited experience, if you can get a little win, right? If you get something where you're like, oh, I can do this, then you can build on that kind of momentum. And so I guess my question is, what are some of those low bars that we can set for ourselves in helpful ways that let us feel like this is doable? And maybe the low bar is a minute of silence a day. And say, can I do that?
Even
and
30 seconds.
Right,
There's an app you can get on your phone called Calm. C-A-L-M.
Okay.
It's 30 second, or you can make it a minute. And like the 30 second one has a circle, and it just starts encircling, closing down.
Okay.
And it's both sight and sound, and it's raining.
Oh, wow.
30, and you're simply just quiet.
Yeah.
See, even the apps can be that way.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, for me, if you want to start a new practice, and be quiet. Don't worry about what prayer should I pray. Be quiet for a minute.
Yeah.
Just be quiet. It's an enormous task to begin with.
Yeah.
Just be quiet, and you'll be amazed what begins to come into. There's a beautiful prayer. It goes, be silent, still, aware, be awake. For there in my own heart, the Spirit is at prayer.
Wow.
Listen, learn, open, find, heart, wisdom, Christ. That kind of a mantra was given to me years ago by a intern, in fact, I was working with in parish ministry.
Okay.
And that's just stayed with me.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes when I'm doing a quiet time, that will be a mantra.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just use maybe just two of the words. Be silent, still. And yeah. that'll be it. And just stay on those two words.
Yeah.
Or listen, learn. I'll just stay with those two words.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying you just sit there without maybe, because sometimes it's hard to shut the brain down.
Yeah.
So you,
because there's a lot of things to do, right?
I gotta
pick up the kids. I gotta cook dinner. I got laundry to do. And so I'm making my to-do list. I'm sitting silently, but I'm making my to-do list in my head.
So you fill that space that's so noisy with, you give it two words.
Mm.
Be silent still, or listen and learn, or open. And you fill your mind that's always racing with just two words, and you just keep saying those words. That, to me, is called a centering prayer.
Yeah.
What I just spoke with you is a centering. You center.
Mm.
Sometimes when the sisters would do retreats, and then I've kind of learned to do the same, is I'll say, is everybody here? And what I mean by that, are you here? And then we'll do a quiet prayer.
Yeah.
That might take a minute, minute and a half, like the one I just used.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we're done, I say, now are we here 100%? Because they've brought all kinds of things, and sisters will say, okay, put everything under your chair.
Yeah.
Symbolically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the worries, now we're here. What I'm saying about that, that can be the same entrance into a Lenten prayer, a Lenten practice.
Sure.
And again, if it's a minute, then it's a minute you didn't have before,
right, yeah.
of a quieting down, a centering
yeah.
of yourself.
I love that. I was listening to another podcast, and they were talking about sports athletes in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about baseball hitters and what it takes to be a good hitter in baseball, which I am not one. So this is fascinating for me. But there are so many hitters who have just like five or six words that describe their swing. And so it's, you know, there's plant, there's step, there's drive, there's, you know. And when they're having a slump, what many of them will do is just repeat that one word. You know, they'll pick one of those five over and over. And that, you know, at this at bat, I'm just going to put that word into my head over and over and over. And the theory that they had behind that is that it lets their body do what their body already is trained to do naturally.
Yeah.
Right. So I focus on this word, everything gets out of the way, and my body does what it's supposed to do. And I think that's the same kind of premise that you're opening up for us here, that we center ourselves in those one or two words, and it lets our spirit do what our spirit's intended to do naturally, right? That this is what we were created to do and to exist into, but we get everything else that gets in the way, telling us you have to do it this way, telling us it has to look like that, and sometimes we just need to shut ourselves up.
And what happens after you've practiced that for a while, your quiet time begins to expand and get a little longer. But what I meant earlier when I say, don't sit down and say, I better be quiet for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
you haven't been still for 10 minutes in a long, long time, then it becomes drudgery.
Yeah.
It becomes work.
Yep.
You know, spirituality is a grace thing.
Mm-hmm.
God's not saying, oh, good, David was quiet for 3 minutes.
Yeah. Extra check mark in heaven. Yeah.
That's it's for you. It's for your own feeding. Yeah. It's for your own nourishment. It's the whole experience of, I guess when we grow up in the Christian faith, as I did, my dad was a pastor, and so we tend to think you have to have certain merits to you, or you have to better pray for this length of time, and it's not that at all.
Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier, example, this woman was just talking. She was really praying.
Yeah.
She just didn't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
When you're praying, you better have your hands folded, your heads bowed, and you better be in a sanctuary. Or make your own sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
We've made it legalistic.
Yes.
But that was never the intention.
No.
Yeah. You know, we're having this conversation on Ash Wednesday.
Yeah.
And you know, just a few moments ago, we heard that reading from Jesus from the Gospel of Matthew about when you're praying, don't be like the hypocrites where they have to do it a certain way.
That's right.
And they, you know, or don't disfigure your face while you're fasting. You know, just make it between you and God, however you and God need it to be. Make that experience with you. Yeah.
God doesn't expect a lot of words.
Mm.
He expects you.
Yeah.
The person you are, how he's created you.
Mm.
And the words obviously help identify us, but that's your words come from your true self. And sometimes you have... Henry Nouwen's big on that.
Yeah.
Henry Nouwen's a famous spiritual writer, but he said, you need solitude.
Mm.
And by solitude, that's not loneliness. Rather, that's quietness.
Yeah.
Where you are still aware of your life and your breathing, but it's, we all need those times. And you think of Jesus, often he would just disappear.
Yep.
That great story where after they come out of the synagogue and Jesus heals the mother-in-law of Peter, and he heals some people, and then he disappears.
Yeah.
And the next morning, the disciples are really ticked.
Yeah. Where'd you go?
Where'd you go? Yeah. You were supposed to tell us your agenda.
Yeah, yeah.
And all he said, I just went to pray.
Yeah.
And often there's that little phrase, and he went off to pray.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I think that's a great place for us to wrap up our conversation. Thank you so much again. If people have questions about spiritual direction and are perhaps interested in pursuing that kind of relationship, what's a place that they can turn to or look for more information?
Well, feel free to call me. I'd be happy to. That doesn't mean they have to become a directee, but if they have questions, the Cenacle, C-E-N-A-C-L-E, the sisters are there.
That's here in Houston?
That's here in Houston. Let's see. There's books they can read, but if they need some help on what books to maybe read. And...
All right. So I'd say we'll just have people reach out to our email. We've got beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. You can reach out to us, and we'll put you in contact with Pastor Chuck or other spiritual director resources in your area if you're not around here. The last thing before we kind of finish up, we always like to ask our guests for a recommendation, something that's inspiring you or encouraging you, whether that's poetry, spoken word, written word, song, dance, whatever it might be for you. So I'm wondering if there's a recommendation that you might have for our listeners.
I think the best book on spirituality is by Joan Chittister, C-H-I-T-T-I-S-T-E-R.
All right.
It's a book called Illuminated Life.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And it is, I find her, she's a Roman Catholic sister.
Okay.
Introduced over my studies there. It's a great book on what spirituality looks like.
Okay.
And how, and her big emphasis, not just defining it, but how you live it.
Yeah.
And it's never heavy duty. And what she's done is she's taken the writings from the monastic mothers and fathers in Egypt in the 4th century. Of all things.
Okay.
And she redefines it.
Wow. Okay.
Because they had left society, had become so wacko, and went into the desert. And these are their writings. And Joan Chittister has just redefined them for us. It's all a great introductory book to spirituality.
All right.
So.
So that's Illuminated Life by Joan Chittister.
Chittister.
We'll put a link to that in the podcast notes as well, so you can find that. I'm sure it's available on Amazon or wherever fine books are sold.
Yes.
So we'll be able to hook you up with that. Well, Pat, Chuck, thank you again so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. I'm glad. One quote from her.
Yeah.
Spirituality is about coming to consciousness of the sacred. That's Joan Chittister. Coming to a consciousness of the sacred. The sacred is always around us. In spirituality and in directing, hopefully you become aware of that. You awake. You're awakening to that good news. Because this is where God meets us, in the here and now.
All right.
All right.
Occupational hazard, right?
Yes. Have to add. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you taking the time. And we'll hope to have you back again sometime. We'll see what's going on. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you, David.
All right, thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this great interview with Pastor Chuck Kinsvater and all his insights in spiritual development and how one becomes connected with God in a special, unique way, or different than sometimes just through worship or experience, but in the everyday.
Yeah. All right, so if you liked this episode, or if you have more questions about spiritual direction or about how you can experience God in the everyday, send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can follow us on our Instagram at beyond_Sunday.
Yes.
That one always trips me up. It's in there. You all will find it. We know where you are.
Oh my gosh. Well, have a great day. And we'll see you next week.